C.F.W. Walther says, Thesis 1 in his book, Long Gospel, the doctrinal contents of the entire Holy Scriptures, both of Old and New Testament, are made up of two doctrines differing fundamentally from each other, that is, the law and the gospel.
Dr. Carl Fikencher of Concordia Theological Seminary speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Any passage, yea, any historical fact recorded in Scripture can be classified as belonging either to the law or the gospel. That is to say, if we really understand what law and gospel is, we'll find we're not forcing some kind of template over the Bible. We're just speaking the way the Bible actually speaks.
You can listen to Dr. Fikencher's presentation, Making the Case for Law and Gospel Preaching, on an audio DVD from the 2016 Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300 to Issues Etc. For more information, look for the DVD logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
So many times, non-college educated white males have voted Republican. They voted against their own economic interest because of guns, because of gays, and because of God, the three G's.
Those who portray themselves as victims soon come to perceive themselves as victims and eventually paralyze themselves as victims.
Miracles always are never the thing. In fact, miracles are always part of the support system of a message.
In an instance like that, you can just simply say, don't be afraid. These men have come here to take our lives, but they're too late. Our lives already belong to Christ.
Southern Illinois bird watchers love Issues, etc.
Recently, there was an essay titled, So You're Thinking of Voting for a Pro-Choice Candidate. It was written by Rachel Held Evans. It's gotten a lot of attention because she has come out as a pro-lifer who is ready and willing to vote for Hillary Clinton, who is definitely not pro-life. It raises a question, one that we're going to talk about here for the first half hour of Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon. Can pro-lifers vote for Hillary Clinton? Scott Klusendorf will join us from the Life Training Institute. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, we'll do our series Christ in the Old Testament. Today we'll be in Psalm 33, the steadfast love of the Lord, with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. David DeLeiden from the Center for Medical Progress, who produced those series of undercover videos exposing Planned Parenthood's sale and trafficking in the body parts of aborted babies. He'll be our guest in hour two of Issues Etc. The charges that were brought against him and his partner are, I think they've actually been completely dropped now. That doesn't mean there won't be further charges because he's under that kind of legal scrutiny, but we'll talk to him about that and about the videos that he produced and what they're still producing, by the way. And then we'll play Issues Etc., Soundbite of the Week, a simple game we like to play with our listeners, where we play four sound bites, you listen, then you vote. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. You send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or you can vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to answer the question, can pro-lifers vote for Hillary Clinton? Scott Klusendorf, founder and president of Life Training Institute, author of The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Scott, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I've actually seen videos of you debating questions like this. Before we get into an evaluation of Rachel Held Evans' essay, do you believe that a pro-lifer can never vote for a pro-choice candidate?
No, I don't believe that. There are contingencies where it would be pro-life to vote for the pro-abortion candidate. For example, at the legislative level, meaning Congress, House races, that kind of thing, the party that controls the chamber controls the flow of legislation. If you have a pro-life Democrat running against a pro-abortion Republican, and that pro-abortion Republican is in the extreme minority in his own party, meaning the majority of members of his own party will outvote him and vote pro-life, then you want to vote for the party that will advance pro-life legislation. The Democrat Party is not that party. The pro-life Democrat will never have a chance to vote for a pro-life bill unless his party is in the minority. And the reason for that is the speaker controls which bills are brought to committee and ultimately to the floor for a vote. And if the Speaker of the House is a pro-abortion Democrat, pro-life legislation is dead on arrival. And we know for a fact that at the federal level, for the most part, and most of the state houses, you don't have near enough pro-life Democrats to influence that party for good. So you're going to have to vote for the pro-life party as opposed to the pro-life candidate. Now, at the executive level, that changes because a single person can control it. There you might say, okay, I'm not going to vote for a pro-abortion candidate for an executive office. I won't do that. All right. Well, you may have a point there. But when we're talking at the legislative level, you want to vote for the party that's going to advance a pro-life agenda. It's more important to do that than vote for the individual.
One of the arguments that Rachel Held Evans made in her recent essay is, and it's not really formally part of her set of arguments, but it's kind of preliminary to it, that the number of abortions have gone down in the last 8 years, and it has dropped to its lowest since 1973, kind of a preliminary mood setter for her argument that she's going to be voting for a pro-choice candidate. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, she says this, and it's true. The rate has dropped. What she doesn't do is present any evidence as to why it's dropped, other than to assert, give credit to the pro-abortion Democrats who've been in power. Here's the problem with that. Abortion rates have been dropping for decades, and there are reasons for those drops that we can document and document well. The thing that has been most helpful in bringing about an increased pro-life presence and hence a decrease in abortion has been the emergence of pro-life laws at the state level, what we call abortion control legislation, things like parental consent, cutting off tax funding for abortion. Parental involvement in particular has been helpful. These kinds of laws curtail the number of abortions, and they do so dramatically. And what Rachel Held Evans doesn't do is show any evidence how it's the policies of Democrat administrations that have brought about the reduction in abortion. She just asserts it.
She simply assumes a coincidence of 8 years of Barack Obama and somehow concludes causation.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think you can make that argument. Even if there were some things out there that we could correlate with it, it doesn't mean it's causation, as you well say. But more importantly, we have counter evidence showing that pro-life laws are effective. They do reduce the number of abortions in the places where they're at, and tax funding in particular is a very powerful hindrance to people seeking abortion.
Evans begins her argument saying that voting pro-choice is not the same as voting for abortion. What does she say, and how do you evaluate it?
Well, let me just back up for a minute, Todd. I want you to imagine something. I want you to imagine a political candidate that claimed to reduce wife beating, but insisted on keeping it legal to beat your wife. That candidate would be deeply immoral, even if he proclaimed a desire to reduce wife beating. I mean, it's only in fantasy land that your vote for such a candidate could be construed as pro-wife, in this case, no pun intended. And that's what we're being asked to do with her essay. This is craziness. Any regime out there that claims to be personally against abortion but is going to make sure that it's legal at every turn and use taxpayer money to promote it overseas, use the UN to promote abortion to developing countries, to put the lasso around their necks and say, listen, you will go with our abortion agenda, or you're not going to get the relief you need. This is not a neutral regime. This is a deeply immoral one, and she's asking us to just close our eyes to all that.
Now, to her point that voting pro-choice is not the same as voting for abortion?
Well, imagine me saying, Todd, I personally oppose slavery. I don't like it, but I think it needs to be legal. I'm pro-choice on that issue. There's no neutrality here. If you support a government that is taking the position that fetuses do not have a right to life and institutes that position through all of its policy decisions, that is not neutrality.
She seems to also proceed with kind of an equivalence, where she says, she says this, characterizing all pro-choice voters as pro-abortion is inaccurate and unfair. And she says, in fact, a majority of Americans, 56%, say that abortion should be legal in most cases, even though nearly half, 49%, believe it is immoral. Can someone say, I believe, like you said before, I'm personally opposed, but I think it should be legal in most cases consistently?
No, they can't. And this is precisely the point Lincoln brought up when he debated Douglas. Douglas was personally opposed to slavery, but thought each state should have the right to vote it up or down. And Lincoln came back and said, no, wait a minute, Judge Douglas, you can't say that. If you truly believe slavery is wrong, you can't say you'd just as soon see a state vote it up as vote it down. You can't talk that way if you see anything wrong in the institution. Rachel Held Evans claims to believe life is sacred, claims to believe to be pro-life, but yet she wants to support a regime that is going to work politically to enshrine in law, both internationally and nationally, the idea that unborn children deserve no protection at all and can be killed with your tax dollars. You cannot argue this out both sides of your mouth any more than you could say, I personally oppose spousal abuse, but you know what? If you want to beat your wife, I'm pro-choice on that, and we're not going to pass legal sanctions against you.
Another argument she makes is criminalizing abortion won't necessarily reduce abortions. How do you evaluate it?
Well, first of all, notice the target's wrong here. The pro-life target is not simply to reduce abortion. It's to enshrine in law protection for all human beings, regardless of their level of development. And what she has done is essentially here change the subject to merely reducing abortion. And as I said a moment ago, a regime that said, listen, we want to reduce wife abuse, but we're going to keep it legal, would still be deeply immoral. But beside that, she doesn't present any link to any empirical studies that backs up this point. She's just asserting this. And we have clear evidence, again, from state laws that have been enacted, that when you control abortion legislatively, its incidence drop. And she doesn't do anything to address that. I mean, does she really believe that if we legalized rape, for example, the occurrence would go down rather than up? This is craziness. It's counterintuitive.
She argues that pro-life advocates ought to be supporting rather than opposing efforts to help low-income families care for their children. I wasn't aware that this was part and parcel of being pro-life to oppose the help of low-income families.
Well, this is typical doublespeak from the left. They basically say you have no right to oppose abortion unless you take on all these other left-wing social programs. I mean, this is ridiculous thinking. Imagine saying to the American Cancer Institute or American Cancer Society, you have no right to oppose cancer unless you also oppose heart attacks, diabetes, melanomas, and every other kind of illness out there. Unless you're willing to take all that on, you're illegitimate in your work. That's nuts. How does it follow that because the pro-life advocate opposes the intentional killing of an innocent human being, he must take on all of society's ills? That's crazy beyond thinking. I mean, Frederick the Great put it well, he who fights everywhere fights nowhere. And for pro-lifers to succeed, they have to focus like a laser beam on the question, what is the unborn? If the unborn are one of us, they deserve protection. And what's being done here with Rachel Held Evans, she's trying to get us distracted from our main target. And this is very typical of people on the left.
She's again changing the subject. I mean, the subject is a worthy one to discuss, the help of low-income families, trying to prevent unwanted pregnancies, but it's not the point of the abortion debate.
No, it's not. I mean, Todd, there are root causes to everything in life. There are root causes to why men beat their wives. But only a crazy person would say, we can't make it illegal to beat your wife until we address all the underlying social causes that might move a man to beat his wife. Heck no, we make wife beating illegal. We don't sit around and wait for all these other things to resolve themselves. And that's what she's suggesting here as regards laws protecting the unborn.
Not part of her formal arguments, but part of her statement here reads, Sometimes I think it's easier for us to talk about saving millions of babies than it is to work at creating a culture that can sustainably welcome those babies as they grow into children and adults. What do you make of that statement?
Okay, this is, again, a false either or. Look, we don't have to choose between protecting the unborn in law and helping those with crisis pregnancies so that their children are welcomed into this world. The fact of the matter is that crisis pregnancy centers vastly outnumber abortion clinics in this country, and we know for a fact from all the sociological data that's been done recently that conservatives outgive for charity their liberal counterparts by a very wide margin. And this is typical for people on the left to say, oh, you pro-lifers don't care. You say you care about babies, but you don't do enough to help them once they arrive. And it's all nonsense. Pro-lifers do care. And even if we didn't, Todd, let's say we were as cruel as some say we are. We don't give a rip about these kids once they're born. The question then becomes this. How does my alleged unwillingness to adopt a child or help him after he's born justify killing him before he's born? That's the question here.
Finally, she says, if we want to dramatically reduce the abortion rate in this country, we must support efforts to make contraception more accessible and affordable. And then she cites, as she says, study after study after study.
She cited three studies there, one of which wasn't a study at all. It was an opinion piece by Amanda Marcotte, who's one of the most outspoken abortion choicers in the country. This gal could not be more pro-abortion. So one of her links goes to an article by Amanda Marcotte. We can throw that out as being evidence. Then she cites some third world countries from a journal that were published in a journal called The Lancet, which purportedly shows that these countries where abortion has been legally restricted, the rates go up rather than down. And then she goes on to cite some other links to where contraception would help solve this. But she really doesn't give us the whole picture. In fact, Planned Parenthood's own research arm, the Guttmacher Institute, published their own study where they found that the problem wasn't that women didn't have access to contraception. They had plenty of access to it. It was as easy to get as a candy bar. The problem was women who didn't use it, not women who didn't have access to it. And in fact, one New York Times journalist put it this way. He said, the problem here isn't that we don't have enough birth control. The problem is we have a profound lack of responsibility among women who are too lazy to use it. And this guy is a pro-choice advocate, William Salatin. So the idea that we're going to solve this just by getting more condoms federally funded is fantasy land.
And then finally, her final point kind of is to say, look, the alternative here is Donald Trump, and can we trust him to really be a pro-life president? I don't have a lot of confidence in that, but what are your thoughts, and where does that fit within her greater argument?
Well, it's a non-starter as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, she's right. Of course we can't trust Donald Trump. I have no idea what the guy would do. But here's the choice in front of us right now. The choice in front of us is between a candidate that we probably can't trust, we don't know what he'll do, and one we know for sure will promote evil wholesale. Given that choice, it's not unreasonable to vote for the guy that you're not sure what he's going to do versus the one you know will promote evil wholesale. And make no mistake, Hillary Clinton and the Democrats promote evil wholesale. And I will tell you this, Todd, I get weary of Christians bending over backwards, insulting our intelligence, telling us that it's really pro-life, really more in tune with biblical worldview to vote for this candidate who will promote evil wholesale. Who the heck do they think we are? Do they think we're that stupid? But yet, this is what we keep seeing from Rachel Held Evans, Doug Kamek, and others. And I got to tell you, I'm losing patience with it.
Scott Klusendorf is founder and president of Life Training Institute, author of The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You can purchase this book and find out more about Life Training Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Scott, thank you and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Our regular weekly series is Christ in the Old Testament. Today, Psalm 33, the steadfast love of the Lord. In hour two of Issues, Etc., David Dalyden The producer of those undercover Planned Parenthood videos will be our guest. He's just had all the charges dropped against him. We'll find out what they were, why, and what effect those videos are still having. Stay tuned.
Martin Luther taught that the chief function of music and worship was the proclamation of the Word of God. With Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church, you will hear over two centuries of Lutheran musical theology, beautifully performed and faithfully sung. For a limited time, save 10% on this 4-CD set when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music. Brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
An umbilical cord of biblical truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky. And St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.